Freedom. Disclosure. Equality. Consciousness. This is GFM Media with Brendan D. Murphy and Amy Devlin, and you are the Global Freedom Movement. New consciousness, new media.
We're here with Dane Wigington for episode 56 of GFM Media. Dane's basically the preeminent authority on geoengineering or so-called chemtrails, and we're really, really glad to get him on the show, especially in the lead-up to the Freedom Summit up north in Byron Bay.
That's going to be here on the 23rd, 24th, and 25th of October this month, so it's coming up in a couple of weeks. Dane will be joining via live feed, which is going to be amazing, and there is a massive lineup of other speakers that we can't wait to listen to. So if you haven't got your tickets, please head up to Byron Bay and join us there. 3 days of pure truth.
Yeah, so Dane, thanks so much for joining us, brother.
My pleasure. I appreciate you two helping give a voice to this particular issue. Again, I know we face a great many challenges, too many to quantify, but if there's one that really supersedes all the rest, it's what's happening in our skies. It dictates everything else. That's why I've focused on this issue so exclusively, not to negate any of the rest, but if we have one issue that's a gaping hole in the bottom of the boat on which everything else depends, that would be this issue.
Yeah, for sure. It's huge. I mean, and it's amazing that there isn't greater awareness of it, considering that all you have to do is look up and you can see the evidence right in front of your face on a daily basis.
You can, for any that bother to look up, and it's astounding how few people do and how disconnected people are from the real and the natural world. I think you could light the sky on fire and many people wouldn't notice it. They're too glued to their electronic entertainment, but people don't stop to consider that the atmosphere is as thin as a layer of paint on a basketball, mathematically, and that's what keeps us alive on this ball of rock in a very harsh environment. And to experiment on that very thin layer that allows life to exist is folly of the first order, and we're about to find out how lethal that experiment is if it continues much longer.
Mm-hmm. Okay, so we should we'll back up a bit, and we'll ask you the obvious question, which is, how'd you get into this, and what's your background in it? You've been researching it for a long time, I know.
A long time, in fact. When I moved to, and I'll ship you guys a shot right now of the particular location I'm in, I planned on, hoped for, assumed I would get cleaner skies. I grew up in a very smoggy Southern California, couldn't wait to get out. And moving to the Pacific Northwest, of course, assumed I would have cleaner air. And our home being off-grid, my background being in renewable energy, I worked for Bechtel Power 3 decades ago. That's a long time. And Bechtel is certainly not a reputable company. They're like Halliburton, one of the many corporate criminal corporations, again, that we face. But that background still helped me to live off-grid. And when I began to lose massive amounts of my solar uptake from whatever these aircraft were leaving behind, clearly something was going on. I researched, began to isolate the primary elements in geoengineering patents. Again, for your listeners that don't know, geoengineering is the intentional manipulation of Earth's climate systems. And those elements, primarily aluminum — that was my house picture going off to you, by the way. Sorry about that noise. The primary element of aluminum in this case showed up in my initial lab test at the state lab, 7 parts per billion, which we call the baseline, even though that was already high. And the amounts just kept going through the roof, absolutely through the roof. The more the sky was blocked with these aircraft trails, the more power I lost, the higher the aluminum count went in the rainfall. All the dots kept connecting, and at a certain point, you're forced to face the fact that you're breathing what they're spraying with completely out of control, unregulated experiments, and it's a fight for life for me.
Yeah. I guess, being out where you are, you are more likely to notice it than most people. We're just looking at where your house is situated. It's an incredible spot. So it looks like, it's beautiful, beautiful land. And But you've seen effects from this this spraying over the years.
It's horrific. It's absolutely horrific. In fact, that region where you're looking at that photo, the normal annual rainfall is 70 inches. That's right at rainforest level.
Wow.
And the ecosystems here were extremely vibrant, thriving, even as recently as 10 years ago. But the decline has been catastrophic in that time. And the tree die off, the wildlife die off. In that region that you're looking at, something we can use for a barometer, insects. That's a pretty good barometer. And the insect population in that region, Northern California, has declined in the last decade 90%.
Wow.
90. Jeez. It's a virtual crash. And that should be headlines everywhere. If the insects can't make it, we're not going to make it. And it's really, right now, it's silent here. I mean, we used to have birds that were so abundant that you couldn't sleep in the mornings, and bears in the yard, and turkeys and deer, and the forest is basically silent now. And that's happened in 10 years is truly astounding.
Yeah, that's really disturbing. So, have you found your physical health has been impacted at the same time?
Well, certainly, whatever health we think we enjoy would have to be better if we weren't exposed to this. And I'm quite rigorous with my health care, and I think it certainly helps. But yes, I've noticed respiratorily issues that I never had before, and sneezing and so forth, and your nose can actually burn if the spraying's heavy enough. You can feel a little bit in your nasal passages, and it certainly has a long-term cumulative effect. We know that these metals are bioaccumulative in the system, so they're building up in all of us. And whether people want to admit it or not, or face it or not, is really irrelevant. The lab tests prove it's in our air column. If it's in the precipitation, and it is, it's in our air column. And to put some quantity behind how much is in our precipitation, that initial baseline test I mentioned of 7 parts per billion of aluminum, over the next 18 months, single rain events contained as much as 3,450 parts per billion.
Wow.
Of aluminum. It's literally highly toxic rain. We had snow samples off the side of Mount Shasta, which is quite an icon mountain. It's considered a pristine water source. We had snow samples with 60,000 parts per billion, highly toxic snow.
Wow.
So it's, people just don't understand the gravity of what's unfolding, and the fact that this aluminum should not be there. And that's, we can talk about that if you'd like. That's one common statement by disinformation sites to try to insinuate this aluminum should be there, and that's an absolute lie.
So what do they how do they try to justify the aluminum presence?
Well, this is their argument, that because aluminum is about 8% of the Earth's surface strata, which is true, it's the third most abundant element, that we should see it everywhere. What they don't tell you is this, that aluminum does not exist in the environment in free form,
mm-hmm.
period. It has to be mined and refined and sprayed for it to be raining down on us. If this aluminum was always there, we would have never had aquatic insect life and much of the terrestrial insect life. And in fact, none of us would be here if this aluminum was constantly raining down on us.
Mm-hmm.
And these particulates from the atmosphere also have countless other effects, completely disrupts the hydrological cycle, shreds the ozone layer. So again, you have half-truths put out by the disinformation sources and sites that people really need to investigate and think for themselves. Obviously, most people, if they stop to consider what they already know, they would come to the conclusion that, of course, aluminum is harmful for you. And of course, it wasn't there before, or we would all have been diseased and sick and dead a long time ago.
Yeah. So in the natural world where aluminum exists, it's as a compound. What form does it commonly sort of take?
Well, it's bonded to other elements. Bauxite, mm-hmm. is the primary element it's bonded to. So it's a highly reactive metal, and that's why it doesn't exist in free form, and that's why it is always bonded to other metals, or other elements rather. So again, this is a material that also has a very high synergistic toxicity, which means when you combine it with other elements, it becomes much more toxic still. Mm-hmm. So we have other elements that we know, even with the climate engineering patents, we have other elements we're all exposed to. We have mercury in our mouths, many of us, or shot into our veins with vaccines. Mm-hmm. We have mercury floating around in the air from coal-fired power plants. So from a lot of sources, we're getting those two metals. And in the case of those two metals, the toxicity can increase as much as 10,000%. That's peer-reviewed study. So it's not a little bit worse. It's unimaginably worse when you combine the metals.
So sorry, we're going to...
It's okay. Okay.
I was just going to say, obviously there's massive amounts of aluminum in the air and around the place now that shouldn't be there. What are the other major elements or compounds that you've been finding?
Barium, strontium. Barium's a known immune suppressant. Strontium has a long list of negative effects. Depending on the time of year when the precipitation is tested, we see other metals. Lead, copper seem to be elements that are in the ice nucleating mix. There's no doubt countless different applications for different purposes. In the wintertime, when we see, we get snow now, or we've had snows in the last 6-7 years, snows that can start to occur at 45 degrees Fahrenheit. That's quite warm, and it certainly shouldn't be snowing at those temperatures, but it does. And this is a chemically nucleated snow, and we have the patents for this process, so why would we think they're not doing it when it's snowing at those kinds of temperatures? Flakes that look like giant balls of cotton candy, very unnatural, heavy. We have the Chinese scientists openly announced that they were nucleating snowstorms. Why would we think it's not happening here again when all the dots connect? And in those mixes, we see other elements. And I don't know, did you see any of the reporting, for example, from the eastern U.S. of people talking about the snow behavior, that it didn't really melt and become liquid?
Yeah.
And it... Okay, you saw some of those reports?
I saw some of that, yeah.
Yeah, it was like plastic snow or something. They were saying.
Yeah, there's a lot of different reports from a lot of different people, and the bottom line is there's substance to it, because we know that a chemically nucleated material would sublimate, as they describe, which means it would convert, as a chemically nucleated material does, it converts from a solid to a gas and generally bypasses the liquid phase, like dry ice. So this is what we would expect. And did you guys happen to see the 75-pound ice balls in Lake Michigan?
No.
I missed that.
That's one worth searching online. If you're in front of a computer, you'll see lots of pictures of that, and you'll be surprised that you haven't seen any media on that, because they don't want people to see that. But what's more astounding than these big round spheres that have only appeared in recent years because they're chemically nucleating those areas, and that nucleation process tends to build around a central core, so you end up with these big balls. And that occurred on some cases with 40 degree lake water.
Wow.
How do you get these balls at temperatures that far above freezing? So I should be speaking in centigrade, because that's what you guys use there, right? So
yeah.
So that's 4 or 5 degrees C. How does that happen? These are events that should be really looked at with great alarm by the population. And I just published about 4 or 5 days ago pictures that we got, satellite pictures over the Arctic from September 15th, and we just got some from Greenland, that appear to show massive chemical ice nucleating efforts on the sea surface. They're trying desperately to create the appearance of an intact ice pack over the Arctic when the mass is almost down to nothing. And at this point, who knows what they're doing up there. But the pictures we got, if people look at the recent column on geoengineeringwatch.org, that's our website again, no advertising, no politics, just data, they'll be alarmed. You don't need to know anything about meteorology to look at those pictures and know something's really wrong. So the geoengineering is completely out of control, guys.
I've just got that article up with the ice balls. That's insane, that picture. It looks Looks bizarre.
Yeah, it's really weird. I mean, no wonder they don't want people looking at that photo. You can see straight away this is really, really bizarre.
It is, and there's a lot more strange occurrences with the ice that, you know, big drifting ice masses that actually with the wind have blown all up over the surface and actually really encroached on houses, and phenomenon never seen before. And of course, this is part of how they get the headlines. If you guys, did you see last year the Boston snow that kept coming and coming and coming? Did you hear about that down there, down under?
It rings a bell, but we didn't sort of spend a lot of time. I didn't look at it a lot, but obviously, yeah, there's something relevant there.
Well, the media made a huge thing about that here. It was headlines just about every day. In fact, first they focused on, okay, the lake effect snow, which if they set up the right wind patterns over the Great Lakes and funnel it in a certain location, they did in Buffalo, New York, a very, very narrow band. You could go from 3 feet of snow to nothing in literally blocks.
Wow.
And anybody who thinks that's normal is not grounded in reality. And but all the media showed was the areas with 3 feet of snow, a tiny little area, as if it was so cold. Huh. And the same with Boston. They showed every night this, you know, record Boston snow, and never mentioned about the fact that you know, the Sierras, the snowpack for California, which are 14,000-foot high mountains, there was nothing. And so they're trying to create an illusion of a certain climate scenario in the U.S. especially, and it's worked quite well to convince the population that, especially in the eastern half of the U.S., that things are colder than they really are. And I know people look back at when media was trying to talk about warming and so forth, but you don't hear that anymore. They've changed directions. That's important for people to understand. Things are so bad now that they're simply trying to hide the gravity of what's unfolding as long as they can, and that's part of how they do it. If they show Boston snow over and over and over, and this lake effect, and these ice balls, and a frozen lake at 40 degrees, it creates a certain mindset with the population so that they are not forced to face certain realities that they really don't want to face. And that's that our climate is disintegrating, and climate engineering is a huge factor in that equation.
Yeah, absolutely. We know that the media is always trying to sculpt our views, and it's clear that if they did put something like this on national TV, there would be a little bit of awakening going on, that's for sure.
Now, how do you think people would react if they knew? And this is our point again with all the things we face. If the media really knew, I mean, if the population, excuse me, really knew, yeah, that they're being subjected to this experiment, this grand lethal experiment with irreparable consequences, what do you two think would happen? I know what I think would happen. I think there would be a shockwave around the globe. I think people would be in the streets with their pitchforks and torches.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think a lot of us have been waiting for such an event, but it's still not happened yet.
Not yet, but you know, we're in a time that's unlike any other, and in this regard, there are certain issues now that are past the breaking point. It's not going to go away. This is not like 9/11 that people can forget about and not look at the real facts around that particular incident and the official story, how unsupportable that story was, and they can forget about it. Yeah. They can do what George Bush told them to do, just go shopping and you know, forget about any of this and just consume and don't think. And you can't do that when you don't have any more water coming out of your faucet in California, or when fires are burning everything down, or when everybody you know has respiratory problems, getting sick and cancer. And we have marine ecosystem collapse, we have crop collapse. When you can't carry on your life as it was before, you're forced to face certain realities, and I would argue that time is now. It's happening.
I wanted to go back, Dane, to you mentioned the Arctic and how they were trying to create the appearance that there was more ice there than there really is. Now, we've had this global warming stuff rammed down our throats for a long time. So it's interesting that, I mean, I can see ways where, you know, that trying to create the appearance of more ice there would actually be detrimental to their global warming promotion. But what do you see is going on there, really? Like, what's the motivation there?
Well, I appreciate you asking that, because here's where we really need to separate what was and what is. And was there a time when they were pushing carbon credits and trying to use disaster capitalism in their favor? Yes. Is Al Gore a fraud? Yes. But that doesn't change what's happening. And I encourage people to look past those very polarizing people and objectives that were there at one time and look at what's happening now. So this is what I would ask. Did you guys see any headlines that, oh, by the way, the Arctic ice at the start of this year's melt season was at all-time record low and started at an all-time record early melt? Did you guys see that headline?
I don't actually recall.
Okay, well, I didn't think you would, because they didn't put that out anywhere.
Uh-huh.
They hid that as much as they could. And this is my point, that the game has changed. It's changed from a point where, again, the disaster capitalists have tried to use what's happening to the climate in their favor, and they're still using it in their favor. You have weather trading derivatives, which are basically holding cities hostage to weather disasters and so forth. But the fact that the climate is not just warming, but in total meltdown, is really inarguable at this point. And I know that ruffles a lot of feathers, and people think, oh, you must love Al Gore, or you must like the environmental groups that are ignoring geoengineering. Not true. In fact, you have environmental groups like, you guys know who, ever heard of the group 350.org? You ever heard of that group?
Mm-hmm.
It's a big climate group, Bill McGibbon. Well, these are some of the most hypocritical groups on the planet. These who are ranting about the climate, but you can't have a legitimate discussion on the climate without discussing climate engineering first and foremost.
Yeah.
You can't. And so you have groups like 350.org with Bill McGibbon, who receive money from the Rockefeller Foundation.
Mm.
That's a bit of a conflict, isn't it? You have supposed independent news sources. You guys know who Democracy Now! Is, Amy Goodman? Do you know who that is?
I know that name.
They're the largest syndicated independent news source in the world. I've met Amy twice, and she likes to pretend that she's this oracle of truth when she's receiving money from the Ford Foundation.
Oh, wow.
And she's not allowed to talk about climate engineering.
Wow.
She'll talk about global warming, but not climate engineering. Well, you can't have that discussion legitimately. You can't. When climate engineering, all available data indicates it is making a bad situation far worse, not better. And at this point, a comparison I like to make is, you guys remember the big Gulf oil spill here?
Yes.
Remember that?
Yeah.
Did you ever hear of a chemical called Corexit?
That's it, yep.
Was used? Okay. Which is banned throughout the world. But they used it here, and it's a very good example to compare with geoengineering, because in that case, Corexit didn't correct anything. It simply helped to hide the problem at the cost of making it exponentially worse, and according to environmental impact, worse. Why would they use it? Because it simply helped to hide the problem. And the same is true with climate engineering. When they can create these cold events, like in Boston, and really divide the house, if you will, so that people don't want to hear about climate anything. That they, if they're cold and they're shivering and they're in snow, especially where the greatest population in the U.S. is the eastern half.
We just lost you there for a moment, Dane. Oh. Sorry.
It's okay. I don't know where I left off. The important point I was trying to make is that if you look, I've done about a half a dozen articles on the freeze-fry scenario in the U.S. The West fries, the eastern U.S. freezes for the last 3 years. And if you look at the maps, there's a blue zone, which is a below normal zone that sticks out on the whole planet Earth, and that's the eastern half of the U.S. because it's the focal point of massive chemical geoengineering. And if you look at the data, you look at the meteorology, this can only be accomplished through massive climate engineering efforts, and that's what we see. And so that's where most of the U.S. population is, on the East Coast. divides the population as to what's really going on with the climate, because if you're freezing in record snow in Boston, anybody who thinks the planet's warming has to be out of their mind. But if you're living in the middle of, like the picture I showed you, and it's 90 degrees, 90, which is about, what's that, 30-something C, mm-hmm. in the middle of winter, then, oops, sorry about that. If it's 90 in the middle of winter, then it's not so hard to know something's wrong. I mean, we're averaging about 20 degrees Fahrenheit here above normal year-round, 20 degrees.
Wow.
That's how hot it is here in California. So, again, all I encourage people to do is, you know, certainly ignore Al Gore, but to actually look at what's happening in the cryosphere, not what anybody says, not what I say, not what NOAA says, that's National Oceanic and Atmospheric Administration, or don't look at any source of data. Look at the pictures from the ground. Look at the Inuit villages that are now collapsing into the ocean. Look at the actual film footage we have of massive collapses in the cryosphere, astounding images like on the movie Chasing Ice. So, again, with the climate engineering, if we look at the whole picture and why they'll try so hard to hide it, is one, they've made the climate system, they've completely derailed it, if you will. Mm. And along with the protective layers of our atmosphere, we can relate the fires and so forth. You guys are having a lot of fires down there, yes?
Yeah, we always have fires lately.
But you're having more intense fires in recent years, are you
yes,
not?
Yes, we are.
Okay, so let's look at climate engineering's part in that. And this is where, again, even if you want to ignore all other sources of damage to the climate and only look at climate engineering, that should still be considered. In the case of the fires, climate engineering robs the rain, disrupts the hydrological cycle, bioavailable metals, contaminating root systems. We have peer-reviewed study to prove the horrific effect that causes. The trees stop nutrient uptake and they die. The incredibly intense UV, which you guys have there, right? Very high UV radiation.
Massive.
It's the same here. There's a northern hemisphere ozone hole that's comparable to the southern hemisphere hole. You probably haven't heard that, have you?
Nope.
No, that's news to us.
So, and we're metering it. We're not guessing, and we have peer-reviewed data to prove that. So those are the headlines you don't see. That fries the trees from the top down. Now you have an incendiary dust on the trees, which is the metal particulates that are falling, which are flammable. Mm. You have more dry lightning because you have a more conductive atmosphere. You have the worst of all factors. And so thus, the forests start to burn to the ground. Then you have these gases don't just float out into space when the forests burn. All this stays trapped here. And the soot settles on the ice. Now we have a lot of black ice, which obviously doesn't reflect heat very well. It absorbs it. Everything starts to feed in itself. Does that make sense?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it does.
It's called a feedback loop. So, again, the reason it matters to understand the state of the climate is that if climate engineers or the power structure ever reaches a point where they try to say, well, yeah, we have a cure for this, it's climate engineering, people will know that, wait a minute, we have 65 years of data to prove that that's only harming the scenario, only making everything worse.
Yeah.
Okay.
Are you aware recently there was a study that came out by a geophysicist? His name's Marvin Herndon.
I know Marvin. I know him personally. Know him quite well.
Okay. So are you aware of his story with the coal fly ash?
I am.
He's going to be coming on our show shortly to talk about that, because we find that really, really fascinating. The fact that this article came out in a journal and has been retracted, it's quite a
Journal, not by him.
Not even by him, yeah. It's quite a contentious issue. But I wanted to ask your opinion about the usage of coal fly ash in the atmosphere. You know, does that fit with your theories, or do you have any other ideas what they're actually doing up there?
I think Marvin's on track.
Awesome.
I think he's on track, and too many dots connect
on that
issue. So here's how many birds they can kill with one stone in that regard. They're getting rid of material that they are having a hard time getting rid of. It has many of the constituents, like aluminum, like barium, that we're seeing in our testing. And it's certainly, we should look at the coal fly ash as a base material, not an only material at all, but a base material. And certainly would have to be processed, and it likely is being somewhere. But here's the other aspects of the equation where it connects dots. Ocean iron fertilization, which is another form of geoengineering. Are you guys familiar with that?
I'm not.
Rings a bell, okay. but explain it for us.
Okay, I'll weave that in. Then this is simply one more method of them trying to hide the severity of what's happening at any cost. So if they use coal fly ash and perhaps other elements to perform solar radiation management, which is spraying into the atmosphere with light scattering particles to try to block some of the sun's incoming thermal energy, which of course it traps more than it blocks overall, and all the other negative effects I said, but that's irrelevant to those that are trying to perform air pharmacology. That's what this amounts to. It's the pharmaceutical approach to planet Earth. So this is, they don't care about the negative consequences. So if they use this material, the same materials have been looked at and studied for ocean iron fertilization. So when it settles out of the atmosphere and settles onto the surface of the ocean, some of those same materials that are in coal fly ash would then become elements for ocean iron fertilization to create an algae bloom, because some of these organisms can feed off, for example, iron oxide. So that creates an algae bloom, which sucks up carbon out of the atmosphere. But that then, you know, that creates a dead zone in the ocean. It creates an oxic or hypoxic zone. But they don't care about that because it lowers the carbon count.
Wow.
Do you follow me?
Yeah.
So, and we see this happening. We see dead zones popping up all over the globe, and there's a lot of causes for that. I'm not pinning it all on geoengineering. We have nitrates running into the ocean. We have stratification of the ocean, which is also likely related to geoengineering. But in regard to Marvin and his study, his report, and his data, I think he's right on track. And I think that the retraction of that report was simply because the power structure wanted to stomp out a fire before it got too big.
Yeah,
definitely.
That was our thinking exactly.
I agree. Yeah, he's.
Sorry, Matt.
Go ahead. No. I hope Marvin stays with it. He's a pretty tenacious guy, and I'm sure he'll stay with the fight. And right now, the lump is getting, frankly, a little too big to fit under the rug. I don't think they can hide it much longer. And I think at the point in time they can't, we're all going to be in for quite a ride, because they're going to play some big cards. At the point in time they can't hide climate engineering, which back to the Arctic again, and tying this in, anything that would, any headline that will be of such gravity that it would force people to then realize climate engineering is going on. And I would argue if the ice pack breaks apart in the Arctic, and it's close to that point right now, the mass is about 19% of the 30-year norm. That's not much. If that happened, that would expose, that would be about 100 years ahead of schedule, and that would then expose climate engineering. They can't afford that. Mm. So this is why all these things link together. They're all interconnected, and like the photos I sent you guys, and you should have those now. If you look at some of the photos we captured of the sea surface, there's about four photos in there. I think you'll find them shocking. And if you connect that with what we know on the ice nucleation that we talked about, you'll start to see a picture take shape.
I'm just pulling them up now.
No worries. But the with Marvin and that particular scenario that's happened to him, we can't know how many times or how many people maybe have tried to step forward or tried to speak out, and maybe they didn't get very far, you know?
Yeah, I get the sense that Marvin's not someone who will back down. I've seen the letters that he's written to, politicians and that sort of thing, and he's just, he's like a dog with a bone because, I mean, the discovery that he's made is something that should be out there, and I can understand the fact that he's just, yeah, exactly like you, you know, you can't help but know this stuff and want people to just wake up and look at it, you know?
No, I don't think he's going to back down. And another dot that connects with the coal fly ash is this. It gives the power structure plausible deniability. When the elements match, they can simply say, oh, it's not us spraying anything. It's just simply waste from power plants.
Yes.
So it gives them very, very strong plausible deniability, and the elephant in the room continues on, and there's so many dots, again, with the coal fly ash that connect, so many. So I think that's right on target.
So this is the thing, like, this is a multi-layered a multi-layered issue where, you know, we've got sort of these cover stories going on, and we've got this sort of apparently contradictory phenomena taking place in front of our eyes. So you're saying essentially that the engineering itself is supposedly to deflect or reflect the sun's rays, and yet at the same time it's actually trapping heat into the atmosphere. Have I got that right that far?
Yes.
Okay. So
it's trapping heat.
Okay, so it's trapping heat. Would you say that it just seems to me that it would be very unlikely that the people behind this are not aware of the actual real consequences of what's happening. So I'm wondering what the actual real agenda is here.
Oh, they're absolutely aware. Yeah. There's no question those at the top are aware. But there's a lot in the chain that are so conditioned and so driven to maintain their bubble of delusion that they convince themselves that these programs work. I've spoken to one of the architects in these programs. I recorded that conversation, and he clearly has convinced himself that this is for the greater good.
Yeah.
The bomber pilot that dropped the bombs on Hiroshima and Nagasaki, if you've ever seen an interview with him, he convinced himself that was for the greater good. So we have at the top, again, back to the Macondo oil spill, back to the use of Corexit. It's and pharmaceuticals, frankly, for the human body. How many commercials do we see? I use this example a lot because it fits. You know, how many commercials that tell us to take something for a certain ailment, and by the time you hear the list of 20 consequences, you can't imagine anybody's stupid enough to take it. But they do. And so in this case, we have other elements that are not often discussed, even unfortunately by people in the anti-geoengineering community. There are other major issues aside from carbon, like methane. Methane is a very, very real issue. Methane is coming from a lot of sources, but its greatest source is stored hydrate deposits on the sea floor, and they are releasing. We have film footage of some of these releases. We have methane counts from multiple sources in the atmosphere. I'm leading up to your question to answer this, but this is part of what they're trying to hide. Methane's gone from 700 ppb. Methane is measured in parts per billion, not parts per million like carbon. So it's gone from 700 ppb, some spikes up to 3,000 ppb. It hasn't gone over 700 parts per billion in the last million years. We're skyrocketing right now. Then you'll hear the science community, climate science community, refers to methane as being 20 times more potent than CO2. But that's really a partial truth. That's over a 100-year time horizon. Mm-hmm. So over a 10-year time horizon, methane's 100 times more potent. Mm-hmm. It's an extremely powerful greenhouse gas. It's filling the atmosphere right now. So the power structure's behavior, just like it was in the Gulf of Mexico, is to try to hide the severity of what's happening as long as possible, while at the same time making it worse. But they're digging in right now. We know they're preparing. We actually, some years ago, contacted Mountain House Foods. It's a huge freeze-dried food corporation. They went off retail for a while because they were supplying military underground bases. They told us this. And so we simply have those at the very, very top that are preparing for total collapse and trying to keep the appearance of business as usual as long as they can. And don't we see this, guys, with the stock market, or the jobs, the unemployment, don't we see the same type of orchestration? Does anybody really believe the unemployment figures are what they are?
They're nowhere near what they say they are.
No. If you have 500,000 people fall off the back of the conveyor, they no longer count, so the unemployment just went down. And the same with the economy. We have the printing of money by the central banks all around the globe now. It's astounding. Yeah. I mean, they're literally propping the whole global system up right now, and it's about to collapse. And so from every front, they're simply trying to keep the appearance of business as usual, and of course a lot of people making money, especially on geoengineering. How many people are making money on that in one way or another? An awful lot. So it's just again, another example I've used is the pirates filling their pockets with loot while the ship sinks. It's not going to matter.
Yeah,
totally. So okay, so we're getting a picture kind of together here, but what started this whole thing? I mean, what drove the agenda to start this campaign of geoengineering in the first place?
That's a great question. Let's go back to the early beginnings of these programs in the significant scale immediately after World War II ended. These programs were ramped up. Mm-hmm. And it is visible, actually, on global temperature rise maps. It's very visible. Very big dip occurred. In 1945, you had a steady escalation of global average temperature. In 1945 to about 74, it leveled off and actually dipped, because the climate engineering was going on over the poles initially, and that affected global weather quite profoundly. And there was a cooling effect, just like a volcano. If you guys, if you've heard of Mount Pinatubo, for example, when Mount Pinatubo went off in 1992, the aerosols, the small particulates that put into the air, cooled global temperatures about a half a degree C, slightly higher, for almost a year. But it also cut rainfall down horrifically, because these particles, as I mentioned earlier, have a drought-inducing effect. They create too many condensation nuclei, so you don't have as much precipitation. So if we look at natural examples we have, that's what the stated purpose was, to try to mimic that for solar radiation management. And we have government documents to prove this. At geoengineeringwatch.org, we have a number of documents. People refer as their defense, their denial defense, that, well, you had condensation behind, for example, the B-17s, the World War II bombers. And those engines had, one, they were very crude, so they put out a lot of particulate matter, which the jet engines don't. And two, and more importantly, they had water vapor injectors on them. Of course they're going to produce a condensation trail. So, again, a lot of facts that people don't know, they're not told, but the condensation trail notion, that's what we're seeing, absolute lie.
That's the first thing that you really learn when you, within the first 5 minutes of actually investigating the subject, is that what these things are is not condensation trails. So the minute someone says, tries to even insinuate that that's what's up there, they've immediately disqualified themselves from the conversation, because it shows they've done absolutely no thinking or research whatsoever.
They haven't, and you have how many people in academia behaving in that manner?
Exactly.
I mean, that's what they're programmed to do. They know not to bite the hand that feeds them. And who pays for the universities and everywhere? I don't care if you're in Australia or the U.S. The power structure, those that print the money, fund and pay for the universities, they pay for agencies. The whole system is being kept afloat from the top down by printed central bank money. So they control every lever at every level. And from state agencies to local agencies, it all connects to the money umbilical. And that's how they've controlled things for so long. That's how they can tell the state of California, for example, to stop testing for aluminum in drinking water in 2002, which they did. They stopped testing for it.
Wow.
How convenient. In fact, one test we saw at a local agency, the aluminum counts when they were still testing were through the roof, and that was right at the point when they were stopping, and they subsequently sent out a letter saying, oh, we made a mistake. You need to move the decimal point back to the left three. In other words, to decrease the level of aluminum by 1,000 times.
Wow.
And so that's how they covered that last test up, and here we are, you know, and so many things aren't even not being tested for. And we have a population that thinks that there's someone somewhere in some agency that's looking out for them.
Yeah.
Couldn't be further from the truth.
I wanted to mention, since we're talking about these planes and, you know, the tracks they're leaving in the sky, one of the things we found that we have an app here on the phones that lets you, track. It shows you what planes are in the area, around you.
Right.
And it doesn't show up these planes that are dropping the chemtrails. You can't, it won't, they don't show on the screen.
Yeah, we hear that a lot. And the transponders are turned off. And for, you know, again, for people who don't want to see reality, and there's plenty of them, I'm sure you guys have, you know, from our conversation here, you've obviously communicated with those. And I, over the last 12 years, I've had too many to even begin to recall. But for those people, nothing you show them will matter. They're not going to come out of denial. You can't, as the Chinese proverb goes, you can't wake someone who's pretending to be asleep.
Yeah.
And there's a lot of people pretending to be asleep right now. But they're not going to have a choice for long. Again, the equation we face, the destruction to the climate system, from many sources, and again, climate engineering being the single greatest of all, can't have a discussion about the climate without discussing climate engineering first. It's so horrific and so non-linear. That's very key to understand. It is completely non-linear. We are about to hit the wall from many directions, and now we add marine ecosystem collapse. Again, a lot of reasons for that collapse, but have you guys, we talked about the iron fertilization, the lack of oxygen in the oceans. The oceans are heating to tremendous temperatures. In fact, they're catching fish off Alaska that shouldn't be farther north than Southern California. We're seeing water temperatures in some cases 7-8 degrees C above normal. Those are huge differences. So climate engineering, again, what does it do? They're suppressing hurricanes in the U.S. Now, I don't know how much you guys have seen on this data. I've covered a lot of it on Geoengineering Watch. Many people don't know that we've had a 10-year cessation of major hurricane landfalls in the U.S. 10 years.
Whoa!
How can that be? From our brutal years of 05, 06, no more landfalls, and this is because they're massively suppressing hurricanes. Well, back to the oceans, back to the fish die off, back to how they can't hide this much longer. The oceans are stratifying. They're layering. They're not mixing. Hurricanes are a way the planet tries to cool itself. Can't do it when they're suppressing hurricanes. We have record cyclones in the Pacific. You know that. You guys have probably seen some of those. Cutting swaths through the Philippines like Cyclone Haiyan and all the hurricanes hitting Japan. But nothing hits the U.S., including the last cyclone, Joaquin, which just happened. You guys, I don't know if you saw what happened to South Carolina. That was another story that we documented quite well as being a modified event. But as they're suppressing these major climate systems, there's so many downstream effects. Oceans stratifying, dying, fish dying, marine ecosystems dying. Global pelagic fish populations are down now some 90 to 95%. That's the food fish.
God.
Almost gone. So what I'm saying is that when you interfere with life support systems, and that's what geoengineering is, a lot of bad things happen. And not to blame everything on geoengineering at all. There's a lot of problems. We've done a lot of damage. But that's the epitome of human insanity. You can't hide it much longer.
Yeah,
I don't think.
I hope, you know, I mean, what we're seeing, unfortunately, is the fact that things in general right across the board have to get worse before people start paying any attention. I mean, we're seeing that now with the TPP has just gone through. So, you know, that's yet another, like, that's going to create so much more stress and trauma that, you know, it'll wake more people up. But it had to happen. I mean, you know, we could have avoided it, but only in a hypothetical world could we have avoided that, because it seems like, as you observe, most people are just too embedded in denial to want to face reality, so it has to be forced on them.
God, that's so true. I mean, it's a very unfortunate fact, but it's so true. If people can stay in their bubble of denial, they will, but they can't much longer. And that's why with 9/11, again, on that particular event, when we have such glaring falsehoods, if you will, that most people here in the U.S. don't even know there was a third building.
Wow.
When 9/11 that collapsed. You guys know about Building 7 that collapsed?
Yeah.
The third building, right? So,
yeah. So,
I mean, how do you miss that? And it was actually, Richard Gage is somebody I know. He's 9/11 Architects and Engineers for Truth, and they paid for a six-story. Yeah, the billboard in Times Square. Did you see that?
Yeah, we saw that and thought, yes!
yeah.
We were wondering who paid for that.
Richard Gage did. He's totally committed to this fight. And So think about that, a six-story digital billboard in the middle of the place where it happened and still no reaction out of the population. I mean, how completely ambivalent can people be? But now there's not going to be a choice. Again, the degree of total biosphere implosion is so rapid that there's simply being a lot of efforts to hide it right now. Mongolia just lost 80% of their crops. 80%? Yeah. How long can you hide that? So, again, this is why we feel the seeds we're planting right now, all of us working together, people like yourselves giving us a voice and what Marvin Herndon has done and others, and that if we can sow enough seeds as this implosion unfolds, those seeds will sprout and people will have at least the tools they need to understand what happened and why, and we can at least change the flavor of what we face.
Mm. Yeah, totally. Okay, so am I correct in understanding you, to rewind again, and I hate to sound like I'm harping on about it, but...
No, keep going.
Yeah, I mean, this whole thing, this whole scenario that's now spiraled right out of control, or so it looks, am I correct in interpreting that you're saying it initially started out as an experiment, like a military weather control experiment?
Well, ultimately, this is all about power and control. Mm. Yes, so their desire to, quote, own the weather, and we have a document you guys may have seen called the military, it's called Owning the Weather 2025. It states their desire to own the weather. But the long documents we have, again, from the 50s and 60s, some 150 pages long, one 750 pages long, completely outline their goals, their objectives, their budgets. We have this data. You know, so how can this issue be ignored and marginalized? But their goal was to decide where it should rain less, where it should rain more, and then of course as the climate system began to unhinge, then they decided they would tech their way into hiding that by quote unquote solar radiation management and ocean iron fertilization, and it's heaping one layer of insanity on another, back to the methane that's filling the atmosphere. Now we have Project Lucy and Project Alamo, two acronyms for programs to use the ionosphere heaters around the planet, the HARP installations, which you guys know what those are, I'm sure.
We know all of them.
So you have a multitude of these facilities around the globe that are immensely powerful, can heat the ionosphere to 15,000 degrees Fahrenheit or more. Now their method of trying to degrade the methane in the atmosphere, which climate engineering has played a big part in causing that disaster to unfold in the first place. Now they're going to try to microwave the atmosphere. It's happening already because we see the signature on noctilucent clouds of methane that make it clear they're already doing this to microwave the atmosphere with opposing frequencies with unknown consequences to try to molecularly degrade the methane and keep it from building up. So it's just an unimaginable downward spiral of the power, the lust for power and control over the climate systems, and the more damage they do, the more they ramp up the programs, the more they expand the scope, scale, dimension. It's insanity. It's so unbridled. It's difficult to comprehend.
Yeah, and it's clear that on some level there's a real disregard for the carnage that's being created here. And at the same time, you know, you mentioned earlier the underground military bases. So it would seem that a lot of these preparations being made, and we know there have been trillions of dollars poured into the creation of these underground, structures and cities. Obviously, that's got to be partly related to the fact that they know they're destroying the ecology out here on the surface.
Oh, they certainly know. Those at the top certainly know, and down the ladder they're starting to figure it out. And I've mentioned on a number of programs that I got contacted from an Air Force general. It's about 3 months ago now, and which was really an uplifting call for me. You know, when you get a call from somebody like that, on the inside, he's retired, but he's communicating with others in his rank, and it helps you to fill in the dots that these people really don't know. They're finding out, and the only way we can really break the back of these programs is from the inside out. It's the only way. There's no going up against the U.S. military. If you know, in a frontal sense, these are our brothers, our sisters, our mothers, our fathers in the military. They don't know what they're participating in. Mm. If we could reach critical awareness where they actually knew, their families knew, their children knew, we can stop these programs from the inside out. And we're getting nearer that point, because I do hear from people in the military, not just this general. They're waking up fast, very fast, and the power structure knows it. But again, something I point out a lot, we're all getting sicker by the day. We're all getting dumber by the day. That's a mathematical fact because of what we're exposed to and the neurological effects. And at any point, the power structure feels too threatened, given the aerosol mechanism they already have above our heads. If they alter that mix any time at all, they can clean the whole playing field. Yeah. They can put us all down anytime they want. That's a fact.
Yeah. I mean, that's just, it's so sobering to hear it. But, you know, I think we kind of need to be shocked sometimes.
Well, you know, that's really indisputable. I mean, if however much people would reject that notion, we're talking about people who have no regard for life or what they do. And how many examples of that do we need? And then you hear that, you guys have heard this, I'm sure, they wouldn't do this to themselves. Have you heard that?
Yeah.
How many times have I heard that? So, again, how many examples do we have of them doing this to themselves? And examples I give frequently are Fukushima. That could kill us all. And yet we have 60 plus more nuclear facilities being built right now. And no regard for what would happen. Depleted uranium, if you guys have heard of that, it's used in NATO ammunition, U.S. ammunition. It poisoned some 200,000 of our own troops in Middle Eastern conflicts. They don't care. You know, this is where the patriotism thing really, the nationalism is disturbing at this point, extremely disturbing, that people think that they're patriotic if they slap a little sticker on their car that says support the troops.
Yeah.
And that's all they do. And then they go to Costco, and then they go to a movie, and they get a Big Mac, and they don't give a damn about anything else that's going on around the world. They don't care that our troops were poisoned by our own ammunition. They don't care. And they don't even know, and they don't want to know. And as you guys correctly stated, you know, people are going to have to be forced to wake up. And that point is very near. And if we see what's happening with right now in the Middle East with the pushback from other countries, they've had enough of a lot of things going on right now. And I think from multiple directions, guys, we're facing converging catastrophes, if you will.
Mm. Yeah, that's very clear that on every front where these psychos are, you know, running their agendas, they're ramping them up all at once.
They are. And I think, again, with the geoengineering awareness, what I've argued before, if there's a place we could put a hole in their armor, this is it, because it's affected everybody equally. Everybody's been hit and hurt by this. Nobody is unharmed. And if we can reach critical mass of awareness in time, if we can beat them to the intersection, if you will, we're going to hit the wall in many ways that you can't undo what's been done on so many levels. But if we could expose this before they're ready for it to be exposed, we could still change the composition of what we face, and it would be a leap in the right direction, a quantum leap in the right direction. And this is the issue that could overturn everything. It would drag 9/11 to the surface. It would drag everything to the surface. Once people know they've been irreparably damaged, and their child's autism and their grandparents' Alzheimer's and their dried up dead farm or their flooded farm, or that everything had a connection to geoengineering, we would have a very, very pissed off population.
Yeah.
So even if we did have a really pissed off population, and we all are at the fact where we know that this is happening, what can we do about it?
Well, again, I would argue this: if we simply reach critical mass, the rest of the wheels will turn. I had a lot of people for a long time. You know, I get a lot of suggestions from people as to what else I should be doing. And I I'm doing everything I can and working 80-hour weeks, you know, yeah. And that they all had a reason of what could be done to fix it all, like attorneys and legal action, for example. You know, I don't have the resources to hire a team of attorneys, but now we have a team of attorneys. Why? Because we reached a high enough level of awareness where these attorneys realize they're going down with the ship too.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah.
And now they're on board. You can't fight a battle without an army. And you can't raise an army without awareness. People who are truly committed, people that have been forced to wake up. And those are the people you want on your side anyway. So now we have six U.S. attorneys and two Canadian attorneys and maybe three or four being added there. And because we've reached this level of awareness, we have a communication with some top military people. We have CEO of one of the world's largest environmental engineering consulting firms participating in our attorney calls. He's solidly on board. Why? Because we reached enough awareness where they came on board. And if we could reach that critical mass where those participating, the military specifically, refuse to participate,
yep,
that's the end of the programs, right? Yeah. Then and there.
Yeah. Oh, you go.
I agree. I just wanted to ask Dane, hold that thought. These planes that are doing the spraying, what do you know about them? Are they unmanned drone planes?
Can't know. We can't know that. I spoke to a KC-135 pilot face-to-face. He's a friend of a friend. And he didn't know what he was doing up there, just flying from A to B. And he went back that after our conversation at some point, he asked questions. And the last news I got of him was he was medicated behind a desk. So you don't ask questions.
Wow.
But certainly we know that the technology is there and been there for a long time for the unmanned aircraft. That they're flying drones in Afghanistan from Las Vegas. Mm-hmm. So we know the technology is there. It would certainly make sense to plug some of the leaks by not having extra people in the loop. But we can't know. And certainly we also know there's plenty of people that will do whatever they're told for a paycheck and a pension,
yeah. Yeah.
Whatever they're told. How many meteorologists do we have absolutely lying their backsides off about what's going on? We have these forecasts, and I've confronted our local corporate media affiliate here and their meteorologists that, you know, how can he know, unless he's just reading a script that's given to him, which is exactly what he's doing, mm-hmm, that 3 days ahead of time or 4 or 5 days ahead of time, it's going to be, quote, mostly sunny. What is mostly sunny? You guys have that term down there, mostly sunny?
We have similar kind of, non-terms.
We had, they took away the term. Every day used to be fine. That was the term we had. Tomorrow we'll be fine. Next day we'll be fine. But they actually took that term away, and now we have sunny, cloudy.
Partly cloudy.
Partly cloudy is our term. Partly cloudy, yeah.
Yeah.
Well, partly cloudy here means maybe a few real clouds with a lot of spray. Mostly sunny, though, almost always means no natural cloud cover at all, just aerosol spray. Then back down to the Gulf Coast, picking up moisture, which they need to chemically ice nucleate, and it streams up the eastern seaboard, keeping them cool while the rest of us literally fry. So there are instances where we definitely see their activities creating higher heat and more intense UV. And certainly the overall effect is that, because we have that from NOAA and from NASA, that the, quote, persistent trails, which are not condensation, but they are admitting on the record and have now in recent studies, this is adding to the conditions of warming on the planet, not mitigating it. So at a certain point, I think the forced realization of a lot of people in even these programs, when they realize, hey, this is not what I was told, this is not what I was signed on to participate in, you start to feed that into a lot of other data, the contamination, the fact that we're told now by MIT, one of the major research institutions in the world, that within 10 years, one out of two children are going to have autism. Mm. Statistics like that are pretty staggering, and they start to help wake people up.
Yeah, yeah. Dane, I would actually venture, looking at this scenario that you've given us, this diagnosis and prognosis, I mean, it looks like an overtly ecocidal agenda, an anti-life campaign, and obviously whoever's orchestrating it, let's, like, assuming that whoever's orchestrating it is actually living on planet Earth, they're going to be affected by it. But it looks like maybe, I would venture to say that the people at the very top of the pyramid are not actually living on the Earth's surface. They're probably in these underground bases where they feel like maybe they're more shielded from the effects or protected or what have you. But they obviously don't care. It's obviously they've got this finesse to a high level, high degree of control from what you're saying. They can really, they've really got it quite advanced now. But it's so destructive that they must be in a position where they feel like they're insulated from the effects, and they actually want this to play out in an extreme a manner as possible.
Yeah, I think that's basically on target. If I could back up a little bit, you know, and we look at the detonation of the first nuclear weapons, they did not know the consequences. They were told this could cause a chain reaction and do who knows what, but they did it anyway. Yeah. If we look at Project Starfish, which was the detonation of hydrogen bombs in the magnetosphere, which still we have repercussions from today, they did it anyway. And most importantly, psychoanalysis of those in power, and in most, if not all cases, we're talking about psychopathic individuals, in clinical analysis of those personality types, there's a common thread with the various forms of psychosis, and that is a near total lack or total lack of comprehension as to the consequences of their actions, even to themselves.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Massive blind spot. No matter how much evil genius, if you will, we're talking about, there's a certain blindness with that type of mental condition, which permeates the whole power structure. Mm-hmm. And at a certain point, you end up with a cancer that's a headless, heartless, soulless beast that grinds on, and each little cancer cell doesn't seem to know or care that they're killing the host. Does a cancer intend to kill the host? No, its intent is to proliferate no matter what. And the host eventually dies. And we're in a similar scenario. And I think also we have this element. The arrogance of such people is so total and so immense that for a very extended period, they believe they could control the climate system without immediate repercussion. Mm-hmm. But the methane issue and the ozone issue, more specifically the methane issue, has changed all that. That they know now that they have torpedoed the ship, and there's no stopping the methane release. And everything they do is making it worse, not better. I mean, when they manipulate upper-level wind currents, that's changed ocean currents. Now we have warm water pumping in the Arctic, and there's a huge cold zone. Have you guys seen the anomalously cold zone in the North Atlantic that scientists are scratching their heads about and they can't explain? It's the coldest, and in ocean temperatures that are off the scale to the warm side, there's a cold zone right where the Atlantic conveyor, the Gulf Stream, you guys saw the Day After Tomorrow, the movie The Day After Tomorrow?
Yeah.
Yep.
That's the scenario that is, where a zone gets cold, shuts down the Atlantic conveyor, and are they trying to shut that down? I mean, there's certainly runoff of ice from Greenland that's causing a lot of cold water to accumulate there, but also all this ice nucleation that we see. We saw a lot of nucleated oceans off the East Coast with 40-degree ocean water. Ocean water freezes at 2 to 3 degrees lower temperatures than fresh water. So we're talking about ocean water with frozen material on it at 4 degrees C. How can that be? So are they trying to manipulate perhaps even an ocean current there? Because as it stands, the climate engineering has helped to alter ocean currents in a way that has been pumping warm water into the Arctic, which is helping to thaw the methane and release it. And I think that was an unintended consequence. Mm-hmm. And so we can only guess at the full degree of what they're trying to manipulate right now. But I think that there's a realization even within the power structure that the ship is going down, that they're on it, and I think now there's infighting and friction happening in a lot of arenas.
Yeah, okay. I like the comments you made on the psychology of the power structure, because I think it's actually, it's worth pointing out anyway, because it's for people who don't know, you know, it's crucial to understand that the people in at the top of these pyramid structures are actually psychotic, but also it's actually it reflects on us because they are literally a reflection of the collective consciousness. So if they are operating as in this way that you describe, which is a sort of blind disregard and an unawareness of the consequences of their actions, and you know, lack of care about it as well, you know, that actually is a reflection of the state of consciousness of the masses. I mean, you know, we see that everywhere. People don't want to know. They don't care what the consequences are. Their short-term vision is all they have, and even that's blinkered, and they're too distracted. They just don't care. And that is a reflection of that psychopathology at the top of the pyramid that you were describing.
Oh, you're so right. You're so right. You know, a lot of people don't like to hear that sort of conclusion, but there's no arguing it. You're exactly right.
Yeah.
You know, the bottom line is, yeah, people will turn two blind eyes to anything that they feel will disturb their reality. And, you know, you're conclusion that that's the state of the society we live in, you're exactly right. And I simply, for myself, I've never been an activist, I've never been politically oriented, but this last 12 years of my life in this battle, I couldn't look the other way. Mm. I couldn't look the other way.
And it does transcend, utterly transcends politics. I mean, I think a lot of people who are kind of switched on, maybe even without realizing it, they automatically kind of avoid the whole politics thing because they sense subconsciously that it's a bit of a sham. But this actually could be really beneficial to, I mean, like you said, everyone's affected by it, so it will help people move beyond even the realm of politics and this whole like left versus right thing, and you know, the us versus them mentality. Like, we're going to be pressed into a new form of awareness here by this issue, and hopefully, you know, it serves its purpose, and we actually pull together and pull through, which I think we will.
You know, your point is valid, and I've tried to utilize that aspect of this issue to unite the tribes, if you will. And mm-hmm. I've had, even though this, some people might perceive this as an environmental issue, it's not. It's a life and death issue. I mean, if you can't breathe without sucking this in, you have a fight for life. So I've had some of the most consistent help, for example, from the Tea Party in America, which most would imagine not to be concerned about environmental issues. They're very concerned about this issue, and I've had the least amount of help from environmental groups, like the Sierra Club.
Yeah,
Sierra Club, the epitome of hypocrisy. I've the last confrontation I had with the head of Northern California Sierra Club, he turned and walked away like a coward when confronted with the fact that he'd been given data for 8 years and had done nothing with it. And when would he face this issue? And he just didn't have the spine to stand and talk about it. And we see the same thing from Greenpeace, mm-hmm. National Resources Defense Council. We see these people doing what amounts to mowing the yard while the house is burning down. That's the epitome of hypocrisy. So, I hope they do come together. I think at some point they will. And but we do see it transcends all political lines, and we are bringing people together. We get groups of people that, in a certain room, are everybody from Tea Party to environmental groups to everybody in between. So it is a uniting issue once people really understand the gravity of it and are willing to face it.
Yeah, absolutely. It's so in our faces, and it's bringing it home. I think it's bringing home the issue of the, like, any kind of ecological angle or awareness or issue. It's bringing it right home to our backyard. It's like you said, you know, it's beyond just being a so-called environmental issue. And it's interesting because I think over the years, when people hear the word like environmentalism or an environmental activist or whatever, they have this sort of, it carries a connotation of, oh, well, you know, it's about, you know, some mountain range over there, or it's about, you know, yeah, this some river I've never been to or whatever. Like, it's a compartmentalized thing, whereas we're going to actually end up with this chemtrails are a global phenomenon. It redefines the environmentalist concept, and it puts it back into a proper global, unified, integrated perspective, which is what we need.
We do need it. And in regard to you know, back to the earlier conversation of why it matters for people to re-examine the state of the climate without bias, is because we need to unite with the climate science community that are inexcusably in denial, again, to protect their paychecks and pensions on this issue. But it's not just that. There are some in that community that I know that do not want to lose their credibility of associating with another community that is not willing to recognize that, in fact, the climate is changing radically. And so you have this rift where you have people in the anti-geoengineering community that are not recognizing those changes, but yet recognizing, thankfully, that climate engineering is very real. And then you have the climate science community that are recognizing the changes that are happening, but not recognizing the geoengineering elephant in the room. Mm. And we need to change that equation. We need to have some bridge building there, and that would really help to start to reach the military people, the agencies, and all those who need to step forward. Because, again, a basic argument that I think everyone would agree on is that you can't discuss the climate, again, as we mentioned earlier, without first and foremost discussing climate engineering.
Mm. Yeah.
You can't do it.
It really is a meaningless discussion to have with anyone. You know, like, you're just absolutely right. It's pointless discussing it unless you identify the elephant in the room and deal with that.
You have to. And that can be done in a manner where any other differences of opinion as to other factors, hopefully we can not let that stop the bridge building right now, because we our time frame on this course, mathematically speaking, is very limited. And this is what people are not realizing. People that are focusing on other things, other issues. They're arranging deck chairs on the Titanic. If we simply look at the math we already have from peer-reviewed study, how many species we've lost in the last 40 years. We've lost nearly two-thirds of Earth's wildlife populations in 40 years, two-thirds. And that is accelerating rapidly. How long do people think that can last? Mm. And so on this trajectory, the graph is easy to see. We're in a very short-term time horizon to total global extinction. That is the path we're on. And no ozone layer, no life on Earth. Dead oceans, no life on Earth. Temperatures pass a certain threshold. If they damage the planet is damaged enough, no life on Earth. So, again, from a lot of different directions, you know, if we look at marine ecosystems alone right now, plankton produce 50%+ of Earth's oxygen content. Global plankton supplies populations are down about 50% plus, 50-60%. Those are huge figures, huge. Earth's trees, for example. And this is where, again, anthropogenic changes have to be looked at, human-caused changes. Since the dawn of civilization, rather, we've lost about 3.4 trillion trees. 3.4 trillion. Now, they're dying very rapidly now for some of the reasons we discussed. They're burning, they're dying. We've lost 55% of Earth's trees, over half.
Wow.
The second biggest source of oxygen on Earth. So what I'm saying is these factors have to be acknowledged. And for us to build bridges with environmentalists, for example, and climate scientists, you know, we need to be able to say, yeah, okay, we recognize the trees are dying, the ocean's dying. Those are big things. Those are a big deal. But if we have one single factor, i.e. geoengineering, that we know is mathematically like the single greatest factor in all these equations, how can we not talk about that?
Yeah.
So we can make an argument that I think will keep everybody in the game.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, Dane, you know, I'd invite you to, you know, if you want to add anything to that, please do. I think you've made a hell of a case here and definitely given people plenty of points to follow up on.
If I could only say this, that everybody can play a part in the outcome of what we face if they simply get off the bench and try. And a mathematical equation I often refer to, and people don't believe this math unless they do it on their calculator, if they successfully pass on credible data to two people at the beginning of a 30-day month, and those two to two more each the second day, and so on for 30 days, that's 5.5 million at the end of 30 days.
Wow.
That's how fast the equation adds up. And people don't believe that math. Please do it on a calculator. So if you try, and it's better to pass something on, not just to rant about it and talk about things that you don't really have the full level of research in to answer questions on, pass on some credible data and you won't need to waste your breath.
Yeah.
And for example, at geoengineeringwatch.org, and we don't sell anything. We have no advertisement whatsoever. Don't sell anything, non-political. So we're just a research tool. And if people can use that tool, and we have flyers on our site that you can download for free, print them locally, and keep them with you. It's so simple to say, hey, this is happening. Here's a flyer. Please investigate it. It's a great key to the door. It works 10 times better than trying to rant and point at the sky. So people can arm themselves with that type of material, make every day count, help us to spread the word because we don't have much time.
Yeah, yeah. Well, look, Dane, hopefully thanks to your work and others, we will have more time. Yeah, we really appreciate you joining us to talk about it.
Oh, I appreciate you guys helping to give this issue a voice, and hopefully we'll cross paths one day if I get the chance to come down under again.
That would be amazing.
Yeah, you're definitely going to be welcome, mate. We'll bring you over here however we can get you here.
I wouldn't take that for granted. Hey, it's very good to connect you two.
Yeah,
thank you so much for all the work that you do. It's phenomenal the amount of research and time and effort and energy and passion that you put into this work, and we're extremely grateful for you for bringing this out there, because you know there's no one else that has done it like you. It's just phenomenal.
It's a team effort, though.
Yeah.
The same gratitude back to you guys. And you know, if we're all spokes in the wheel, and all of us are needed to make a turn, but if we all work together, we can yet do astounding things, even at this late hour.
Exactly, and that's exactly what we. What we are trying to do as well is to bring these different groups together. Like you said, the climate engineering is an issue. It's an umbrella issue that affects every single person on this planet.
Yes.
And we're past the time where we fight against other groups and pretend that we're more important than than one another. It's time to really acknowledge that we're all here and we all are. In the same boat, you know, like you said, we shouldn't be arranging deck chairs on the Titanic.
No, we're going to sink. We're going to sink or swim together. And if you guys have ever seen the funny cartoon that's gone around lately, there's a boat and the back half is sinking and the two guys in the back half are bailing and the front half is pointing up out of the water, as boats do when they sink. And the two guys in the front of the boat are saying, I'm glad it's not my half of the boat sinking. You know, that's sort of mentality. We have to get rid of that.
Yeah,
you know?
Absolutely.
So.
Anyway, but thank you, guys. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Dane.
And
we hope to speak with you again.
Yeah, we'll be in touch again, and we'll get another download from you at some point. But in the meantime, look after yourself and stay safe out there.
No worries. Thanks, guys.
Okay. Thanks,
take care.
Dane.
See you, Dane.
You bet. See ya.
Bye.
Bye, mate.
Freedom. Disclosure. Equality. Consciousness. This is GFM Media with Brendan D. Murphy and Amy Devlin, and you are the Global Freedom Movement. New consciousness, new media.